I had a song stuck in my head. Dude, that's gonna sound great. I'm throwing that in there.
That's my water bottle, everyone. We're both leaving New York pretty soon. That's Aiden's water bottle.
My little
ASMR.
My Hydro Flask.
What if we did an ASMR special? This is the ASMR special. But yeah, we're both leaving New York pretty soon.
Indeed we are. In an update, I think I said this last episode, but I will be at home over the summer.
Yeah.
Doing my good old... Michael's crying over there. Doing my good old internship remote.
Yeah.
And then also working at my mom's coffee shop. So...
Spot on Main, shout out. Yeah, sponsor, maybe?
Shout out to Spot on Main. I'll talk to her. We can see, see how it goes.
I'm going home for a couple weeks, see the family. That'll be nice. Next week, I think we're taking off. And we didn't, have the foresight to record more than one episode. So we're just going to take the week off, we think. And then after that, it's unclear what's going to happen. We are not ending the season here, but there's some traveling stuff up in the air. So we should be back the week after next. But
just thinking in terms of traveling, Michael and I are both leaving New York later this week. And just in terms of like getting home, settling in, like we said a few episodes ago, this is the longest that we've been home or been away. Our entire lives. So I think taking some time to get settled in and spend time with family is probably more important in this case. So just taking a week off to do that, and then we'll be back via Zoom good old-fashioned way from the state of Ohio and the state of Texas.
So for maybe a week or two we're gonna be over Zoom, and we will be for the rest of the summer, but I eventually will come back up and be able to record in the studio with this same quality. Hopefully, Ben. We'll see. I should still have access. So, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys so much for listening last week. I was a little, scared is the right word, I guess. I was a little scared that we would have a huge dip in listens after taking a week off. But we really didn't. It was a few less listens, but,
We got a loyal fan base.
Let's go. And so really appreciate you guys sticking through a week off and listening.
Speaking of which, I mentioned my internship yesterday. We had a preseason game.
Yeah.
Which was exciting. It was the first time that I was like working during a game. Unfortunately, it was not broadcast because it was a preseason game. So I really had no idea what was going on. I just followed like the game cast that's like seven minutes behind.
Did you win?
No, actually ended in a tie. It was honestly unexpected.
How many overtimes?
No overtime.
Preseason doesn't have an overtime?
Well, it's supposed to, but they were tied at the end of regulation, and the team or the coach of the other team, the Las Vegas Aces, was just like, okay, we forfeit because it's a preseason game. We've already played. We're just getting the reps in, so it doesn't really matter if we win the game. Like if we keep playing another 10 minutes. So they forfeited. And I think there was just an agreement between both teams that like the Sparks didn't win and the Aces didn't win. It was just a mutual tie.
I was going to say, that's a Sparks dub if they forfeited.
Maybe it's Sparks dub, it's just Sparks tie. But I'm the first game opening night is later this week, and I'm super pumped. I'll actually be able to watch it
That's awesome.
I literally get to watch basketball for my job.
That's awesome.
Among other things. But
I just watch basketball. I don't even do anything about it. Just watch. Anything else to cover?
I wanted to toss in, since I'm leaving New York this summer, I've been trying to be intentional about taking in New York City.
Sure.
Just because I remember last year, like it was so abrupt. I thought I was coming back and I didn't come back. So I didn't really get to savor it. And the past like week or so, I've really just been taking it in. Like, I remember I took the shuttle to Brooklyn to go to class, and going across the bridge, I took a video just so I like have it. And I haven't done that like at all since I came back from COVID, but I would like took it in, you know. And then like today it was raining on my walk here, and I was like, wow, like normally I hate rain, but like New York City rain is like kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And took a bike ride on last weekend, biked 12 miles, which is like absolutely crazy. It's like there's just a bike blath, a bike path,
a blath,
a blath, a bike path on the West River that just like goes straight up.
It's pretty over
and
there.
I just lost track of distance, and I started at 15th, I think, and next thing I know it's like 30 minutes later and I'm on 80th Street.
Wow.
So super cool, super fun. Went with a few friends, and it was very, very nice. So.
yeah I remember the first time ever being in Brooklyn was with you, going on the bus that you were just talking about. We were going to record our first episode of the podcast, or our first one that we, our first ever episode of the podcast. Yeah, it was the first ever episode.
Yeah.
Cause I was thinking, I was like, was that like
so
season
many technical
two?
Difficulties.
It was the first ever episode. We spent like 2 hours getting ready for it.
It was terrible.
In the room, and then
recording. Audio quality wasn't even that good.
That's still one of my favorite episodes, are like the first two that we did in the Brooklyn studio. Yeah. But yeah, that's, I know what you mean. It's funny, like you talk about, like you, last time we were sent home, we didn't have time to like savor things because it was like, A, we got sent home in like a 3 days notice.
Mm.
B, everyone thought they were coming back.
Because
I, and there's that meme going around now of like the timeline where like you take out a chunk of the timeline and say something, and then the rest of it, you say something else. There's one of like COVID, and it's like the first bit of the timeline is like, haha, 2 week break. And then the rest of the timeline is just like the sad face. It's funny. Because that's how it was. I remember people in my class being like, this is awesome. We get extra spring break. And I was like, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you're right.
Now thinking back, it's like.
RIP.
Yeah. Anyway, you ready to get in the movie?
Yes. Let's talk about the movie. But before we jump into it, going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor for today's episode.
So. The Hurt Locker, 2008. Directed by Catherine Bigelow.
With the Avengers.
I knew that's the first thing you were going to say about the cast, which is funny.
There were so many MCU characters. There's Jeremy Renner.
Okay, well, okay.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, okay, you're right. Jeremy Renner, Anthony Mackie, Guy Pearce.
The Wasp.
Yes.
Whatever her name
is. Here's the thing. Here's my opinion about that. It is no longer fair to say this movie has an MCU character in it because of how many characters are in the MCU.
There's a lot.
I remember I had going back to our love for Legos when we were kids. And by the way, Evangeline Lilly is the Wasp. Didn't want to leave her name.
Thank
out.
You. Thank you.
But yeah, I remember being obsessed with Legos. I had a Lego book, and that Lego book. It was a big thing at the time. This was like probably 2011 or something. So right when Marvel was starting to get big, 2008 was the release of Iron Man. 2011 was Captain America and Thor. So it was really growing at that point. Next year was Avengers. The Lego book I had a little caption in it that said, Harrison Ford is the only actor to have more than one Lego of himself. He had Indiana Jones and Han Solo. I think there was one more. Because I remember, because Samuel L. Jackson didn't even have two yet. He only had Mace Windu. He didn't have Nick Fury yet. But by the time Lego Avengers and Marvel come out, every actor, like there are a billion actors now that have more than one. Chris Pratt has more than one.
From Jurassic World.
Jurassic World Legos. And like now it sounds like, well, Chris Pratt's the only one. There are a ton. Martin Freeman has more than one because he's in like some Black Panther Lego sets and he's in the Hobbit Lego sets. Like, and it's not just the Avengers. There's other movies that came out like Jurassic World, The Hobbit, that sort of thing. But my point is, it's no longer fair to say, oh, the Avengers actors are in this. It's more like you watch the Avengers and you're like, oh, the Hurt Locker actor's in this. That's how it should be. Okay, I know that's ridiculous, but there are so many actors in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that it's not fair to be like, this is the Marvel actor.
To be fair, I partially agree with you. Like, I agree with you because now that we've finished the Infinity Saga of MCU,
yeah,
now it's like in the new Loki series, Owen Wilson is in it. Like,
that's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, now everyone just wants to be in
now Owen Wilson thing is going to have a Lego for that role and for Lightning McQueen.
Dude, what does a Lightning McQueen Lego look
like? I had a Lightning McQueen Lego. It was awesome.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Anyway,
moving on. Anyway, yes, we have lots of Marvel actors. We have Anthony Mackie as J.T. Sanborn, who's, when the movie starts, kind of the protagonist. Then Jeremy Renner kind of becomes the protagonist in a way as Sergeant William James, who is the juggernaut bomb diffuser that you see on the cover of the movie. So I picked this movie. I had seen it a couple years ago. I'm a big fan of it. I think mostly because of its kind of, I don't even know how to describe the style. It's very unique in style.
Mm-hmm.
Very indie filmish, in terms of the cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it did feel set apart from a lot of war movies. There are a lot of good war movies, I think, but, yeah, I don't know. It felt different. And so I wanted to pick it, because it felt kind of right to do a war movie on the podcast. I'm trying to branch across a lot of genres. So, I'm a big fan of this movie. Aiden, opinions?
Yeah, I will agree with you. I did take note of the cinematography. I thought it was pretty unique.
Newton Thomas Sigel and Barry Aykroyd on cinematography.
Shout out to those two. Excuse me, I'm sorry. every episode, man. I don't know what it is. I think the cinematography was pretty unique. Comparatively speaking, I don't really watch a lot of war films, so I don't really recall what those look like. Just like in general, I think one thing I really picked up on was just the shakiness of it and the abruptness of it, and I think that really added to the idea of just how much uncertainty was happening within the film and just like in war in general.
Just
like
chaos, yeah.
I was talking to Michael before we hit record, talking about just like the concept of the wars in the Middle East in general and how like almost no one could be trusted because there would be bombs strapped to literally anyone, kids, women, you know, anyone. I think that idea was conveyed pretty well through cinematography, just in a manner of like, you know, everything was unexpected and something could happen at any time. I also found the presence of silence to add to that as well. I felt like there was a lot of silence.
Yeah, or, definitely.
Just like long drawn out shots that included a lot of silence that really like you didn't really know what was going on and you could tell that something might happen, but also like you were surprised sometimes when something didn't.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I think that was pretty interesting. In general, honestly was not a huge fan of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Just for like I said, I'm not really a war film genre guy. You know, we've talked about the season, like some movies are more about character development and more about the journeys that the characters are on rather than the actual plot. And I felt like this movie, didn't necessarily have like a driving plot to it. And it was certainly,
I would say more so than any movie we've watched.
Right.
So
it was definitely more about the characters themselves than what was actually happening in the film.
Yeah. No, totally. You mentioned a lot there. I guess to start, the sound design I thought was really good. You didn't have a lot of music in the movie. Mm-hmm. There were like two or three scenes with
other music than heavy metal.
Yeah, you had the heavy metal that Will James, Jeremy Renner's character was listening to. But like in terms of actual sound, it was mostly 100% diegetic. One that sticks out to me is when he's diffusing the car bomb, and the sound that a car makes when it's sitting in the heat, the crackling sound, and just the engine, you can hear it crackling. It, like, that was the only sound you could hear. And I don't know, like, it, that one stuck out to me. I'm sure there's more cases of that, but yeah, the silence was used super well. Yeah, the shakiness and just the, I mean, there's a lot to talk about in terms of cinematography. The camera was used so well, in terms of the shakiness. I think you don't just grab a camera and shake it around for it to look like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes work and it takes skill. There's a lot of zoom-ins that felt good. There's a lot going on with the cinematography. I think that takes a ton of skill and isn't as easy as it looks, because it looks easy.
That's so true. Like, there was a project that I worked on in high school where I was like trying to get shaky footage, and it's like,
it's harder. It's hard.
Like, yeah. I don't know. Like, you just hold a camera and yeah, it's shake. Like, whenever you want it to be still, it's shaky. And yeah. Whenever you want it to be shaky, it's still. Like, like,
it's
super challenging.
It's an expertise. Yeah. It's you have that mixed with the Rover cam in the first scene, mm-hmm. is what I think of. You have a scene when Jeremy Renner's disarming a bomb inside the car. Again, you have like a camera sitting at the feet of the car, just like really tight spaces. And these are big cinema cameras they're using, you know. And just in general, a lot of POV shots. You had a lot of people looking around and then the camera following their eyesight, which is really well done. Really, I think in general, realistic camera, and really puts you in the moment. And that goes right into, you know, most of the times when they were looking around, they were looking at civilians, looking at them,
mm-hmm. yeah.
doing what they were doing. And I think that was so, you know, you cover you said something, we were talking about this before the podcast, and just the idea of, you know, the war in the Middle East, it wasn't like World War II, where there were people wearing uniforms that you knew you had to shoot. And, you know, that was kind of just the idea, and it was very obvious. And that's so, this movie, I think, captured that really well. It's really sad that, you know, there were all these civilians that they just, like, you felt they couldn't trust. And there were a lot of times, and this comes into writing and directing, which were both done really well. Again, it's Kathryn Bigelow directing it. You know, there were so many cases of, like, a civilian walking up to them and talking to them, and they get all paranoid. You know, there's just people in their houses watching them, and they're all paranoid of them. They're saying, watch this guy over here. Make sure he's not doing anything. And that was just the nature of it. And that was sad. And you know, you did have cases where, you know, there were bombs on people, or there were just situations where there were bombs buried underground where people were distracting them. And you had the guy at the very beginning with the cell phone that kills Sergeant Thompson, Guy Pearce's character, by activating the bomb with the cell phone, just because Owen Eldridge, the younger soldier with them, didn't want to shoot him. And, you know, and you have cases of the guy driving the car up to them and not doing anything, then backing away and leaving. And, like, it's very confusing and very tense. And that was a good way of raising the tension, but I think was also kind of, like, sad and scary of, like,
mm-hmm.
these, I think, you know, a lot of innocent people, and some people that, you know, weren't innocent. And then, you know, that gets tangled up and it's difficult to tell, and kind of it's an invisible enemy. And it was all, I think it was unpleasant to watch. I think we were talking about it. You weren't a huge fan of this movie. I think that it does just, like, I think highlight, like, how, like, war is not a good thing. And we're talking about it, you know, a lot of movies do glorify war. And there is heroism, and there is courage, and, you know, there is something to respect there. But and at the same time, you know, war is not a good thing. And I think, like, it's very easy to look at wars in the early 2000s as examples of that. And I think that that's what this movie really captured. And that's such like a blanket statement and such like a, like a watered down war is bad, obviously. But I think that is what the movie was highlighting. But yeah.
Yeah. wanted to talk about, I really like the character contrast between Jeremy Renner and Anthony Mackie's character, which are, I wrote down, so I wouldn't forget, James and Sanborn.
Yeah.
Yep.
Boom. JT Sanborn, yeah.
Let's go. I wrote down, like, you know, pretty early in the film, I said, Jeremy's character seems to be a rogue soldier, and Mackie's character seems to follow the rules to a T.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a nice contrast, and like you can tell through that first scene when Jeremy Renner's character is just like, oh, like rips the walkie-talkie off or whatever, and like lifts the helmet, like he doesn't need it, whatever. Just like no fear at all.
Mm-hmm.
And Anthony Mackie's character is like absolutely freaking out. You could almost tell that like something bad was going to happen. You know, just in that circumstance where you have some guy that is just doing whatever, and you know, not having people on the same page in general,
mm-hmm.
is
mm-hmm.
a pretty risky move. I thought that was a really, interesting contrast that was included in the film. And then, you know, as you go on, you realize that Jeremy Renner's character is like, just like addicted to war, and disarming bombs.
Yeah.
And Anthony Mackie's character just like doesn't want to die.
Yeah.
Like he was talking in the Humvee when they were coming back from wherever. He was just like I legitimately like I'm glad to leave because I don't want to mm-hmm. die here in mm-hmm. the dust where only my parents back home will care that I died yeah. and no one else cares. And so I think, you know, that contrast carried pretty far through the film. And it was interesting to see unfold.
Yeah. I think it was pretty dynamic. Well, let me think. Anthony Mackie's character was dynamic. Jeremy Renner's was not. Jeremy Renner was a hit. Will James is an awesome character. Such a good character. But yeah. Yeah. He's this guy that follows the rules. Sanborn is. And he's kind of grieving the death of Thompson from the beginning. And James comes in as his replacement. And James says, I'm not trying to replace him. I'm just here to do my job. But it still is like Sanborn's looking for someone new to take to fill this guy's shoes, and this is not the answer he wanted, you know. And it is interesting to see, like, it was so interesting, this guy that is like following the rules to the T, is a guy at the end, he's like, I'm sick of this. He seems like the perfect soldier, so to speak. You know, he's follows the rules, he's respectful, all these things, but he was differentiated as well from Eldridge, the younger guy, who is a rule follower, but also just what is clearly not cut out for what they were doing. And you would argue by the end of the movie that no one is really cut out for it except for Jeremy Renner. Because you have a guy like Sanborn who seems like he's cut out for it and isn't. By the end of the movie, he can't do it anymore. He has to go home at the end of his tour.
Mm-hmm.
Or his rotation. Eldridge, I think, was equally interesting character. After the first scene where he's unable to shoot the person that has the phone in his hand that sets off the bomb that kills Thompson. And I think what's so well done about that sort of situation, and I'm going to talk about the first scene in much more depth, but you don't see... It is never clarified. This guy remote detonated the bomb and killed Thompson. Like, that stuff's not clarified. It seems obvious. It's like they showed the phone, they showed him typing, the bomb goes off. It's like, yes, that's implied. At the same time, it's like, it's just as uncertain while it's happening as it is in Owen Eldridge's mind. of like, I don't want to shoot this civilian. He might not be an issue. He might not be a threat. And it gets Thompson killed, and Eldridge can't handle that. And it's very clear immediately after that happens that Eldridge is different. And that was super well done, acting and directing. You know, it shows Eldridge's face in scenes when he's not saying a word and he's just in the background. It cuts away and shows his face, and you always know exactly where he is, where his mind is, and his demeanor, and everything's different. He's kind of jovial at the beginning, just joking around, you know, and immediately after that, that doesn't happen for the rest of the movie with him. And I think that was really well done. But yeah, you have Will James, who is, like you said, he's like addicted to war. He's interesting to me because he's the guy that's cut out for it. He seems crazy. He takes off his suit and goes to disarm bombs. He doesn't comply with anyone, doesn't communicate with anyone while on the job. And then you have moments of like respect. It's hard to pinpoint his character, and I've been thinking about him for the last 2 days. Because you have a character like Beckham, the kid who's selling DVDs, who, you know, James is nice to and like makes friends with, and then, you know, learns that he died, and, you know, that really hurts and that crushes him.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have like moments where like he does care about people, and you have moments of, you know, him really wanting to save people, and really wanting to like get the bomb defused so that he's able to save people. You also have moments like the car bomb when no one needed to be saved. They're like, let's just leave. No one's going to get hurt at this point. And he wanted to defuse it because it is like a tally, and it's like an addiction thing. And it's an adrenaline thing for him. And then you have, you know, the moments of him like going after people in the dark, saying like, no, like we got to do the right thing and like get even, because like they're laughing about like all of this and all this chaos and death they just caused. And it's our job to go get them. So you have true moments of like moral from him, and where he really cares about people, even more so than you see in Sanborn and Eldridge in the movie. You see a lot of paranoia from those two characters. You never really see that from Will James. You don't see that from him. And that's kind of his craziness and lack of fear. But at the same time, it's just, it's difficult to pinpoint. And that all converges at the final scene when the guy has the bomb vest on. And he's defusing it. And it's hard to tell if he just wants to defuse this bomb or if he's trying to save this guy. And like, I want to know your opinion on that, because like you have moments of both where he just clearly wants to save people. He's really crushed when he finds out Beckham. And that's different because it's a child that died and all that. And well, thought died, right? And that's a little different. But you have both sides of adrenaline junkie versus person that actually cares about people. And then it converges at the end with this bomb vest. So, and I don't know which one it was. And I think it was supposed to be ambiguous a bit in that regard. But yeah, I just found that super interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I honestly did not pick up on that.
Yeah.
But like now that you mention it, I definitely see it. And I think, you know, one thing that sticks out to me is whenever I don't know the guy's character. The guy who sits behind the desk and then is like, "Ah, oh, I'm tired sitting behind the desk."
The doctor, yeah.
Yeah, so, and he...
Cambridge was his name.
I haven't written down. And he steps on a...
A bomb goes off under
him. Yeah, bomb goes off, and he dies. And...
James or Eldridge.
Eldridge. So many characters. Eldridge is, like, pretty heartbroken because, I mean... He didn't say it specifically, but I mean, it was kind of his fault. Like, I don't want to toss blame on him, but
no,
like,
but that, there is without a doubt a sense of he would feel guilty for that, justifiably right. So. Yeah.
Because, like, he was the one that was like,
they dragged him out there.
You don't even know what we do out there. Like, you just sit behind a desk. And then, you know, finally he is like, all right, let's get out there. And, you know, Eldridge is pretty touched by it. And he was like, all right, let's go, you know? And then, you know, he feels kind of guilty for that because he's the one that let him out there. But, you know, in that situation, Jeremy Renner's character offers some comfort for Eldridge, but is also just like straight up, like, he's dead. and that's what it is, you know. And so I think, I don't know if that's necessarily a lack of empathy or if it's just a, like, trying to, like, comfort him, you know, because I feel like in moments of comfort, when you're giving comfort, you have to feel like the strong person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean.
And so I don't know if that's necessarily a lack of empathy or just like him trying to be strong and comfort Eldridge. But I think that moment leading into the guy with the bomb strapped on him, I think leads me to believe that that's tough. I think I'm leaning more towards he just wanted to defuse the bomb.
Defuse the bomb.
Because...
And it could be a cross of the two. You know, because yeah. because he's not... Because you could tell he was... There wasn't a situation where he was timed before that moment, you know?
Yeah.
He was always just kind of going at his own speed and doing it and kind of was confident the whole movie that he was going to be able to defuse this bomb. But this was the first time where it was timed and you really saw that he wasn't able to. And, you know, that was, it was crushing for him, but, and he's freaking out in the moment saying, I'm sorry, I can't do it. But it's just a little ambiguous of if it's like a failure to add to his collection of bomb parts or if it's, and I think, I like to think that it's both. And I think that like, and it's like, you would think that it would be more so saving the guy.
I feel like it can be both.
Yeah, and I think I think that it was both.
I think in addition to that, if he didn't care about the guy at all, then why did he not just shoot him and then defuse the bomb? Or
yeah.
But in that scenario, like, I don't know, if you shoot him and kill him, then what's the point of defusing the bomb anyway?
Well, that would have that would have been the non-ambiguous answer of I'm not even trying to save this guy. I'm just here to defuse the bomb.
Right.
And that would have been clear. But, so I think there's, you know, I think this was the perfect moment to, like, good writing and directing of, you know, yeah. we're going to come to this moment where it is a matter of people being saved and you defusing a bomb for your own interest.
Yeah.
You know, your own adrenaline or whatever. But yeah, no, I like, you know, you think about open-ended movies as, you know, you don't know what's going to happen next. It's like left on a cliffhanger, but that's not what it has to be. It can be ambiguous in this way, and I think that's really great. I was going to mention, there's other instances of, you know, James. I'll just talk about the midpoint of the movie. The midpoint I really liked because you have James who has so far, they've been on a couple bomb defusing missions and he's done some questionable things where he rips his headset off. He throws the smoke grenades so like he can walk through the smoke while he's defusing the bomb, that sort of thing. And he's just like, there's clearly Sanborn doesn't like him and he's not cooperating with Sanborn.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the scene in the desert when they come across the other, I think they were bounty hunters because they had the two prisoners and they were saying like, I'm not losing the money over this, and they get attacked. And so Sanborn takes the Barrett rifle and is sniping people from a long way away.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, James goes up and helps him. And is like they're communicating, they're a team at that point. And that is the midpoint is often the area where character flaws are resolved. It's not always like a good moment or a happy moment. Like Blade Runner, Harrison Ford's character kills a replicant for the first time and he's really struggles doing that. So it's like a resolve moment. And this I felt a lot like that. Midway through the movie, you have these two characters who are opposites of each other in ways, working together to achieve a goal. In that same instance, a few other things happen. You also see for the first time James being a really good leader to Eldridge because he has to wipe the blood off of the bullets because they're being jammed in the Barrett. And you know, he goes down and like talks him down and like relaxes him and is a really good leader instead of yelling at him, which is what Sanborn probably would have done. You know, you see a moment that's like better leadership than you ever see from Sanborn to Eldridge. And like, I think that was really significant. And in that exact 30 seconds, a couple minutes later, you see Eldridge, kill, a soldier that wrapped around and flanked them and was going to shoot them. And Eldridge pulls the trigger, which is something that, you know, he wasn't able to do at the beginning of the movie. So you have all these characters kind of resolving these flaws. And again, like, Eldridge doesn't necessarily end the movie on a high note, you know? And so it's a question of like, do these character flaws resolving in air quotes, do those like really amount to like a good ending? Not always, but there are kind of some resolutions that happen in the middle of the movie there.
I think another point in there is when Jeremy Renner gives up his Capri Sun.
Yeah.
For Anthony Mackie.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And like, legitimately, I thought that Jeremy Renner was just going to be like, that sucks for you. And then just like,
and Eldridge was down there drinking his own.
Right, right. And yeah. I feel like that was a very like selfless leader thing to do, yeah, is to give it up. And I think that just adds to your point.
Right. And there's like, and he finds the body bomb, you know, with who he thinks is Beckett on the table. And, you know, everyone's, and his, even his first instinct is, let's just blow the place up and get out of here. And, you know, he does choose to get the body in and get out of there. And by the way, Ralph Fiennes was the mercenary, and it just says mercenary team leader under his who he played. So I was making sure there wasn't a name to that, but he was like a mercenary bounty hunter guy. Yeah, there were just some cinematic moments I thought were really great. Like, well, first of all, like the cinematography is all, you know, we were talking POV, shaky, you know, using the Rover cams, like different stuff like that, where it's all very home video-ish. But again, I just want to preface it, that's not easy to do. It takes a lot of skill. But then you have a couple of moments that like are like very, you know, you have some like high speed moments when Guy Pearce's character, Matt Thompson, gets killed at the beginning of the movie. You have like a slow motion shot. At the same time, even though it was like slow motion and big and grand, it's underplayed in a way where it's very dramatic. It's like all you see is blood in his helmet. I think commonly you would see like shrapnel flying everywhere and flying into his suit and all that, but like all you see is the front of his helmet is bloody, and that's how you know he's dead. Which I thought was very well done, as well as it's underplayed in a way because you have a moment like that later at the midpoint when Sanborn snipes the enemy sniper. You never see that sniper get hit, but rather the slow motion bullet hitting the sand. And so you have some really good moments that were kind of underplayed in a way, but this high speed, steady, you know, high quality, again in air quotes, high quality like camera is reserved for these moments, which I thought was great.
I will say, high quality, dude, NYU stream quality.
Sorry, yeah. Listen, guys. Well, I found out, I was about to rent it because I turned on NYU Stream. I was like, I just want to rent it and watch it in better quality. It's not available on Amazon Prime unless you have Showtime. You can't even rent it. So
what the heck?
I hope people were able to find it somewhere.
RIP, dude. I was surprised. I was like, really? NYU? This is the best you got?
It was pretty low quality. Yeah, I would have liked to watch it in a little bit better quality. There was one more moment that I was thinking of. I don't know. I mean, I said I was going to go into the first scene in more depth because it was such a good scene. I literally have at the end scene, I have intensity is only built by practical noise, which is what we talked about at the beginning, what Aiden brought up first. But the first scene, you have zoom-ins, you have handhelds, you have POV, you have the Rover camera. You have humor, a bit of humor between Thompson and Sanborn and Eldridge that like alleviates tension. Again, you see like the humorous side of Eldridge that you really don't see for the rest of the movie. You you see an attitude and a demeanor and a body language to Guy Pearce's character that I thought was really interesting. He is, I think the preconceived thought is that you have to be a certain amount of crazy to be a bomb diffuser like that, and you have to have a certain skill level and all these things. But you could just tell that he was still more cautious and a little bit more timid about the situation than Jeremy Renner's character was. Like, you saw him very carefully lifting the wagon when the wheel broke off and planting the bombs in the right place. And, like, he was very, you heard his breath shaking. And that's not something you saw in Will James' character at all for the entire movie. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was something, like, really good that they established right from the beginning. There's a lot of, like, just tension building, like, that you see, like, in horror movies that was really well employed here. The bomb doesn't go off when you think. In many situations,
mm-hmm.
You keep raising the tension by making the wagon wheel break and they have to go fix it. And the bomb doesn't go off there, but instead it goes off later with the cell phone. The first local to approach them that they're all paranoid about isn't anyone. He's just a local.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the second guy that, you know, has the phone that is the threat. Same thing happens throughout the movie, but happens later when, you know, the car drives up, like I said,
mm-hmm.
and
super intense scene.
Yeah, but nothing happens with that. And that's another case of Jeremy Renner. Another thing, I think I may have mentioned this a little bit. We mentioned that he makes friends with Beckham, and you don't really see the other two making friends with anyone in the area. He handles locals better than anyone. And again, it is this idea of he is like crazy and like is fearless, but at the same time, you see him interacting with people, and you know, when you just see Sanborn and Eldridge kind of just yelling at people mm-hmm. to get away, get back, I'll shoot you, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
which was also interesting.
Yeah.
No, you're good.
I'm leaving you out in the cold here, man.
No, you're good. There's a lot of really great things in this movie. The edit. Props to the editor of this movie, and I never thought I'd say this, not that I like it's taboo or anything, but like the editors Bob Murawski and Chris Innes, props to you two, because like this seemed crazy to edit, because you have so many crazy camera shots that are moving so much, you have so much random footage, like it takes art in that edit to like make that look good, and to make it flow well. With static shots, it's pretty easy to cut at the right time and cut to a new camera and, you know, make that look good. But with a moving camera like that, it is crazy. And so very well done. There was also some time edits that passed in an instant. You could tell that time had passed. That mm-hmm. happened a couple times.
Yeah.
Specifically while they're sniping. Yeah, there was an intentional break of the 30-degree rule that I noticed. And the moment where he's looking over the body bomb, Jeremy Renner is, and he's like, guys, come look at this. It's kind of, you have an angle on Jeremy Renner, and the camera barely shifts when, Sanborn enters the room, because it's kind of this jarring moment of, and what that means is like the camera doesn't move more than 30 degrees. The view doesn't move more than 30 degrees, which is something you're supposed to do, because it looks a little off when you don't do that. Which is cool that there are these unspoken rules of, that looks weird, that have just been discovered through the years. They break that intentionally when Sanborn enters the room, or at least that's how I interpret it, because it is kind of a jarring, weird shot that you notice the cut. You're not supposed to notice editing. You definitely notice it in this situation, because it is a jarring moment when Sanborn enters the room and sees this, like, you know, dead child. And it's a terrible thing to see, and that's why they cut like that, I think. And that's, like, again, good editing and good filmmaking, because, you know, the director, I think, and the cinematographer are also aware of that sort of thing on set. And I just thought that was really good.
Yeah. One final thing I wanted to toss in. I don't know how many more things you have, but I feel like every episode I talk about is show, don't tell.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this film had a bit of show, don't tell, but also the scene with Jeremy Renner and his kid. I felt like was a very like poor, like, I don't know. Like it was a good scene, I think, but I think it was very much just like, let me tell you how I feel, like straight up.
Uh-huh.
And I think, I don't know, like,
He was talking about...
He was talking to his kid about, like, oh, like, you love so many things, but as you get older, you start to not love as many things. Maybe, like, one or two things.
I know what you mean. I think it would be one thing if he was, like... I think it would be one thing if he was, like, I'm supposed to be happy being home with my wife and son.
Yeah,
that's
true. Yeah.
And now... But I want to go back to war.
Yeah.
Which is not something that he said.
Right.
And I think that is, like... I know what you mean, though, and that I know what you mean, because that conversation felt a little weird to me too. I don't know if it was for the same reason, but yeah, it is best to convey, I think, things through visuals above dialogue always. It's just more dynamic. It's more fun to watch. It feels better. But
and I think that line, like, I don't know. While I think it was poor use of like expressing things or whatever, like rather than just using visuals, I do think that leaving it open-ended, like Jeremy Renner's like, you start to love only one or two things, and then I was like, okay, what do you love then?
Yeah.
And that kind of leaves it open for interpretation. I said war and unarming bombs.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it.
And what I'll say about that scene as well is, you know, there is still a sense of knowing the situation and the mood without the dialogue. Because even before he said that, like, kind of monologue of you love these things, you only love two things, all that stuff, he was sitting there playing with his kid, and you could tell in his head, like, this is so trivial. Like, I'm sitting here playing with toys, and this kid doesn't know what goes on overseas, and, you know, you could tell that he felt like he wasn't doing anything, which is like common for veterans, common for people that are have just come back from duty. And so I think without that dialogue, I don't know what this says, but without that dialogue, I kind of knew what was going on in his head. And then he proceeded to say it. So I'm not sure if that's justified, because they did show it through showing things, but then they also wanted to say it. So I have no idea. Yeah, and on that subject, I think they did good jobs in other places of showing things, or maybe it's not even it. Nothing really felt forced in the narrative. We did talk about those mostly about characters and not really like one cohesive story of like a mission being carried out, really. But the events felt motivated. Nothing felt forced. You know, you had like the doctor, Cambridge, who was going on, field assignment with them, saying, hey, I want to go out and do that. That was because of the conversation he had had earlier with someone. And that seems like it's simple. It's like, yeah, duh. He's not just going to go out and, you know, do field work for no reason. Yes, but you'd be surprised with the amount of movies you watch, and there are things that are that laid out for you and don't have, you know, the motivation like this. And I think, I'm trying to look if I wrote down other times where that happened. Oh yeah, very creative writing, storytelling. The bomb glove scene, when he goes, I'm gonna go down and get my gloves, and there was the moment of Sam Borton saying, we could kill him right now if you wanted to, and Eldridge is like, wait, are you serious? And like, I thought that was a very creative element to throw in there. You could have a scene where he's just talking to Eldridge saying, I want to kill this guy, I hate him. Instead, let's put a bomb in the scene and him being crazy enough again to go down and drive next to a bomb that's on trigger, that's ready to deploy or to detonate, and let me grab my gloves. It's a very creative way to show that scene, I thought. The rover breaking, a good way again to build tension for him to have to go out and like step next to the bombs. Blood on the bullets was an amazing storytelling device. You could have easily just said, oh, the bullets are jammed, fix them. But instead there's blood from Ralph Fiennes' character that they had to get out of there. I thought that was really, really well done. And then him using smoke grenades to walk into the bomb was just so on character for him. And it was just such, it was funny and it was weird. And it caused tension with Sanborn. Everything felt so motivated. Mm-hmm. And so there was so much duality, because in a moment like that, you have what you need, as you need a moment for Sanborn to be worried and to start yelling, and you mm-hmm. need all that. You also have a way of showing what this character is up to and like what, who he is. The bullets, you know, you need some way to raise tension by them not having ammo, but you can link that to this guy just got killed and there's blood on the bullets. And I think mm-hmm. that it's high effort. It's just so well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's about it. I'm looking through my notes. I mean, I feel like we didn't really do justice to the ending. Like, I don't know. It was, I have here, it says it's interesting that it reveals that he really does care about people, because I guess I did feel at one point like, yeah, he definitely cares about people. I thought it was interesting that when the kid comes up again at the end or near the end to sell him CDs again and play soccer, he just doesn't talk to him. It was interesting because that was the same kid, right?
I'm not sure.
I was assuming that the body looked like the kid but wasn't actually him, and it was the same kid at the end. And he didn't want to talk to him because, like, that was such a traumatic moment for him. I think he has an ego, and as this guy that's, like, very heavy metal and very, you know, intense, he has this moment of, like, vulnerability and emotion, and he just, like, can't reconnect with that. And he doesn't want to forgive this kid for like doing that to him, even though it had nothing to do with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was good. And yeah, we talked about like the characters, how they start and how they ended. So I think that's about it for me. I thought in general, it was in terms of themes, like the movies with quotes at the beginning always tell you what the themes are, you know, like an addiction to war, like war being a drug,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So I always am wary of movies with quotes at the beginning. But, I mean, I thought, all that said, I think it was well portrayed. Yeah, I was a big fan.
Do you have Topo Chico socks on?
Yeah, I do. Good segue, I guess.
Dude, that's so legendary.
Yeah, I do have Topo Chico socks on.
Sorry, I wanted to ask you that earlier, but I didn't want to ruin your groove.
I met people that did work with Topo Chico, and they had socks. So.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So they gave me a pair of socks. It was funny. Anyway, yeah, that is that's the Hurt Locker, I guess.
Is that all she wrote?
I think so. Again, like, I feel like I could talk about this movie for a really long time, because there's not a lot of clarity in terms of I don't know. I guess one more scene to talk about. Is
okay, backtrack. We're back.
Yeah,
in
I mean,
it.
I don't want to leave anything out. I think the scene was really interesting on the helicopter when Eldridge is being shipped out. Eldridge got shot in the leg, I think, by either he got shot by Will James while he was shooting the guys that were abducting Eldridge in the alley, or one of the guys shot Eldridge and then got up. Was abducted. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which happened, but it was interesting because you see Will, you know, being a good leader to Owen and like helping him and like helping him with the bullets and just like, you know, these moments of like showing a connection he has, even though he's not as good friends with him as Sanborn is. And at the end, you know, Eldridge is like, I hate you. Like, I'm the reason you got shot. You're the reason that I got shot. Why we went out in those alleys in the first place. Should have never listened to you. And he's like, I hate you. I'm getting out of this desert, though. And, like, all this stuff. And then turns to Sanborn and says, all right, bye, man. Love you. Which was really funny. And you know, it was hard to watch because I think James in his head was like, he felt bad that he got Eldridge into that and Eldridge got shot, but at the same time all Eldridge was talking about the whole movie was, I want to die and get out of this desert. And he instead was injured and got to go home, even though it was just like a day or two until the end of their rotation. But it was so interesting because I think in James's head, it was this moment of, I've connected to this guy. I've been a good leader to him. I've been a friend to him. And now that's how he's treated at the end because of a mistake that he made. And that felt like a bit of a punishment for James to me. It was like he had connected to a person. He connected to something outside of defusing bombs. And then that's how he got treated at the end of it, I think. I think that's kind of what I saw. And yeah, goes home, can't handle civilian life, and doesn't want to be with his family, and instead goes back to war.
Yeah.
And the last frame is 365 days left
mm-hmm.
of the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, well, I guess that's all she wrote officially that
yeah.
time.
Yep.
Yeah. And I want to thank you all for tuning
in.
Thank
you so much for listening.
We did an Instagram poll to find out what film everyone wanted to do.
Are we definitely doing one of those two, or are you going to pick one, the other one?
No, week? I think I definitely want to do one of those two.
Okay.
I think it's a good time to do that.
Awesome.
And we've not had many people view the story. So I don't know if we
want
to...
Do you want me to be the deciding vote? I'll look at the story right now.
No, we have an odd number, so...
Okay,
so an odd number of votes.
Well, remember what you had, and then I'll click one. Okay, I just did it.
You clicked one?
Yeah.
Okay. doing it live. Okay, so... so we could either do it now, like pick what we have now, or we could just leave it up and then...
Let's pick it now.
Let's pick now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just got a text from someone saying you should do both in one episode.
Oh my God.
I don't think we're going to do that. I like that recommendation. I think if we were, because these are weird weeks and we aren't having a lot of time
yeah.
to begin with, we don't know how many episodes we're going to be able to crank out in the next couple weeks. We're just going to do one. But this person recommended Endgame over Infinity War.
Okay. I think...
And the poll says one of those.
I think with that poll, and I voted in it as well, so I think that officially makes our next movie Avengers Endgame.
Yeah.
Over Infinity War. So, yeah, I guess that's it. You can find it on Disney Plus.
Is this your favorite Marvel movie?
Let me look back in my Marvel Cinematic Universe ranking.
Well, the number one movie, I think you...
And that was Black Panther.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's your favorite, though.
Endgame was two.
Right.
So.
Is Black Panther your favorite?
Yes.
Okay.
And I watched it, actually, a few weeks ago, and I was reminded of how good it is.
Interesting.
So.
All right. Well.
Yeah. So, reminder, no episode next week. Sorry, like, I don't know, it's weird, like, we did the mid-season break, and now, like, we did two episodes, and we're doing a break again, but just bear with us as we, you know, spend time with family and get settled in and
yeah.
figure some things out, so, and Endgame is also a three-hour movie, so.
Yeah,
don't
we're
have
fun with
like,
the episode. I'm not a fan of Endgame.
Well, way to spoil the episode.
No, I'm just giving you guys a heads up. Aiden likes the movie a lot.
I love it.
I'm not a fan of it.
I love it.
It's going to be Pride and Prejudice round two. So,
except mine will get more plays.
Yeah, that's probably true. You gotta appeal to the masses by giving them a bad movie.
All right, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening.
That's all we got. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see you
in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Peace.